Is it plugged in this time, Dave?
Hello and welcome back to the Sprues and Brews podcast. Now I'm going to open up with it. Well, actually, we'll introduce ourselves first, then we'll open up with a couple of apologies. So, first of all, my name is Dave, and I'm joined once again by Jay.
Hello.
And Matt.
Hello.
So, yeah, a couple of apologies. First of all, we had a week off last week because, unfortunately, Nurgle struck again.
That's karma, that is.
It was. Yeah, I was full of flu last week, I'm afraid. So, we've got a bumper show this week, though, to make up for it.
And I've got another apology. Because one of our listeners has been asking for podcast numbers. And what podcast are we on, Matt?
We're on episode 23.
No, we're not.
We're not?
We're not. We're on episode 25.
Okay. 23, the new season.
No, because then it'd be even less.
Okay.
So we're just going to run with, we're on episode 25 overall. I'm not sure how many we are for this season. It'd be something like... 12?
Reset the clock.
Yeah. So anyway, we're at podcast whatever, but I'm in the middle. Thank you, Pandora's Bitsbox, for showing the error of my ways.
It's definitely a lot clearer now.
Yeah.
Podcast lots.
Yeah, podcast lots. Welcome to Number Podcast. So yeah, that will sort all that out. But anyway.
We could do it like... from when we first saw Sanguinius, so it's Sanguinius plus one podcast, and we could just use that as
Before Sanguinius and after Sanguinius.
Yeah, that's the
A-S and...
B-S.
Yeah, no, maybe not. I have a feeling he's going to be mentioned quite a lot in this podcast.
Who, Sanguinius?
Yeah, the winged Primarch. We've got all that to come in the new segment. So, as we do with all our podcasts, we open up with a bit of... what we've been up to. We've of course got our Tale of Gamers, and we're now in February as well, which is important because we've now had to set aside our 40k pledges and move on to Age of Sigmar. So with this being our first podcast of a new month, we need to sort of wrap up January and talk about what we're working on for February. So Jay, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, so so far 2019 has been a brilliant year for the hobby for me. So my pledge for the 40k side was to get the two units of Raptors and the character painted. They have all been done. They've all been done. I've got to put some Armageddon dust, is it? Or Armageddon something on the base of the models, but that'll come at the weekend when I buy the paint. On top of that, I painted a Warlord Titan. On top of that, I painted a Reaver Titan. On top of that, I started putting the base coats down for a unit of Stratus Knights for Adeptus Titanicus. So I'm actually quite chuffed with how much I got painted. February is Siege Age Sigmar, so it's Gloomspike Gits. I've started working on my Squig Herd, my unit of Fanatics, and the start of my unit of the regular Moon Clan Grots, the Stabbers. Oh, and also a Madcap Shaman. So, I'm on track to get them done. I mean, it's a busy month, really, February is. I'm going to try and fit another Reaver Titan in, if I can.
Wow. Nice. And you've got a test model done for your Goblin as well. We'll have to get him on Twitter.
Yes, I painted my Madcap Shaman. He's finished. I've started painting the Fanatics, and once I've had my tea, I'll crack the paint out again, try and get a bit more detail done on those. They should be finished the next day or two. And then I think I'll paint the Squigs next as a little bit of a break from Black Robes. And then jump onto the 40.
That's such a good thing about Goblins, isn't it? You're not going to get bored of painting one particular scheme.
No, it's quite varied, yeah.
Lots of different models as well to keep you entertained.
And when you're bored of doing robes and squigs, you can start painting trolls.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I built all models at the weekend. And the cracking models are really, really good. They're lots of cool poses and things. And actually, they're quite... you can do a lot of... like the squig herd, for example. All the faces are interchangeable with the body, so you can have lots of different looking squigs. The squig handlers... can have different builds, so I think you can build four different squig handlers, plus you can convert them as well, so it's going to look quite varied, the list is. So that's it, yeah, so cracking on with the...
lots of Titanicus in there as well. Awesome. Well, to finish off January, I finished my Eldar Pledge, so they are fully based and finished, yeah. So that was my Autarch with 10 Guardians and a weapons platform, a Star Cannon, and 5 Wraith Blades with the axes and shields. So they're done.
Awesome.
Really happy with the stuff that I've learned that I'm going to take forward into March to make them stand out a bit more.
I think you've really challenged yourself with your kind of blackened bone ski, and that's, you know, not an easy colours to paint.
I mean, that's it. It sounds like a simple scheme, but getting black looking good is tough. And like I say, bone is a hard colour to paint as well.
Yeah. So I'm really happy with those. So yeah, I mean, like you, Jamie, it's so satisfying to finish what I committed to doing in 1 month. I think that's really good.
Yeah.
I think the same goes, like, regardless of what level painter you are, if you sort of, you set yourself a target and you either get close to that or complete it, it's going to feel great. So, yeah, that's really cool. As Jay said, we moved into Sigma. I've settled on a, like on the last podcast, I settled on a on an Age of Sigmar army. I'm doing Stormcast Eternals. So I've set quite a hefty target. I've started on my Knight Encantor because I wanted to get a model done to just, you know, to really clarify that I wanted to do Celestial Vindicators, which I'm pretty sure, yeah, well, I do want to carry on.
Well, we had a bit of a practice game, didn't we, at the weekend?
We did. So I had, I know it's slightly cheating, but I had like 2,000 points of Stormcast Eternals ready to go. So I went up against your famous Khorne Dragon, Matt.
Yeah, Khorne Dragon plus Gore Pilgrims. Not a tuned list by any stretch, but, you know, it, for the dragon, probably as good a proper list as I could get.
Yeah.
With all the buffs going on.
Two drops and you were deployed, weren't you?
Yeah.
So I fought them. Very close game. Knife to the heart scenario. Just about squeezed the win on turn three.
Yeah.
I mean, the Avocators did so much damage to your dragon before they died that everything else could just kind of mop it up.
Yeah.
Whilst my dragon, which I've got in my list, shot off the other side of the battlefield and captured your objective.
Yeah, I think I made a tactical error not taking out that dragon sooner.
Yeah. So, yeah, really good game, and I really enjoyed using the Stormcast. Awesome. Lots of little things that I learned. I need a cheat sheet for them. There's lots of rerolls and there's Celestial Vindicators.
Oh, you'd be quite aggressive with Vindicators as well, then.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the Vindicator trait? What's the
rerolling ones on charge. Okay. Their artifacts you have to take gives your character plus two attacks, but minus one save. So what I'm actually thinking of doing is sticking that on my Knight Encantor, because once he summons the Endless Spell, the Flying Disc of Stormcast, it buffs his save by one. So that can counterbalance is so he's a little bit of a killing machine.
Yeah.
Whilst trying to pretend to be something from Zeech. So that's cool. So yeah, I've really enjoyed them. Once he's completely done, I will then start batch painting. I want to do two lots of five Sequentors. I want to do five Evocators. I would also like to do the Lord Arcanum.
This month,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
So that's quite a lot, but I think... Oh no, Ballista as well.
Nice.
So
that's £60 worth of models you're painting this month.
Well, it's essentially Soul Wars, isn't it?
Really?
It's practically Soul Wars.
Right.
So, because it's Soul Wars, you get the Lord Arcanum, you get the Knight Encantor, you get eight Sequentors, so I'll be painting another two. You get a Ballista, you get three Evocators, so I'll be doing another two. So, yeah, okay, maybe I'm cheating a little bit. But I'm not doing the Castigators.
But if you think Soul Wars includes the rule book,
yeah,
you know, it's more or less £60 so, equivalent of what you get.
Yeah,
and so, you know, on this, we are being a bit, you know, not being super strict where we need
plus,
to make a
plus. I've got an eye on a the 2-day tournament. You know, the last podcast we had Craig and Andy on talking about the July event in Williston for the Purple Sparkling Unicorns, which I will put the link in the text for, because the post is now on the website for those in the crew sort of Cheshire area that might be interested. So I would like to have an army of Stormcast, awesome, maybe with some allies, just to fill it out, to take to this event in July. So fingers crossed. Aside from that, I've not got any Titanica, so that's my painting. Not yet. That's my painting mission done. Matt, you've not painted anything? Great, let's move on to that. No. Matt's always painted lots.
So I'd managed to finish off my Gene Sealer Court. I think I had some bases and stuff to do on the last day. But they're all painted now. I'm going to do a poster. I just need to get the camera out to do their glamour shots.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really, really happy with them. Basically, the whole army I followed two of Duncan's videos for the Neophytes and the Acolytes. Because between them, you've got the scheme for human-looking Genestealer Cultists and Xenos-looking Genestealer Cultists.
Yeah.
And between that, you've got the whole scheme down for, you know, vehicles, infantry, whatever, bikes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they were really fun. I've started on my Fire Slayers, my Frosty Fire Slayers, for February. I've already painted a unit, and we're on, what, the 5th of February, as we're recording this? So I've done a unit of Hearthguard, just to... I'd done a test model in December, I think, just to get the scheme down. Yeah, really, really happy with it. I think it works.
Really unique looking, these guys are.
So yeah, I've got 10 Volkite Berserkers on my painting table right now, waiting to get painted. I can probably do them in a week. And then what'll take a bit longer is the Magma Droth, because I haven't decided on the scheme yet. I'm thinking like dark coals with some flames coming out.
That'd be cool.
Just to contrast to the blues of the army. So it is still going to look fiery.
Yeah.
Because I think I need the flames in there just to break it up a bit.
Well, the flames really work on your half... Is it half guard?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
They really do.
So, yeah, so looking forward to doing that. And then that's pretty much my first month. It's pretty much a start collecting box plus a box of Hearthguard. Mm-hmm. And then probably the same again next month, because there's not many units that I can pick from.
No.
But I'm going to build the army around some of the formations, so it's multiple blocks of them. So I've also been painting some Adeptus Titanicus, because we're very jealous of Jay and Lee getting a bit of progress on their Legios. So I'd sprayed up some models, and they're all built now, and we were going to start a campaign out of Titan Death. So I've settled on Legio Ignatum, because I've got big Titans in that scheme.
So it just made sense for them to have little brothers.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So been doing a kind of tester reaver. The red's down, happy with that. The yellow's down, happy with that. Yellow takes so many coats to build up, but it looks okay now. Doing the hazard stripes, I worked out approximately an Adeptus Titanicus Reaver is a quarter of the scale of a 40k Reaver. So working out my hazard stripes from that down, I needed 2.5 mil stripes. First of all, tried to freehand
very
it.
Very technical and accurate and
well, I didn't,
math.
You know, when I did the big one, I counted the rivets for position of the stripes.
My God, man.
It's going to look good, Dave. It's going to look good. So I did, and the rivets are in the same place on the Adeptus Titanicus model, because anal people are...
Nerd.
Yeah. So I've tried to freehand it, and some of them look okay, but some of them aren't great, and I want it perfect. Yeah. So I've ordered some, it's 3 mil tapes, and I have to change the stripe pattern a little bit, which, and you know, if you're super nerdy like me, it'll probably annoy me a little bit, but I should get away with it. Don't tell anyone. But yeah, so that's my month of painting. Hopefully, if I can get the Fire Slayers done, I'm going to start on some Khorne reinforcements, because I'm planning on taking them to the Throne of Skulls in March, and hopefully Warhammer TV around the same time. Again, Wade has invited us back on.
Invited the dragon on.
Right, cool. Well, you've been busy as always, Matt, and excited to hear about Warhammer TV as well. So that wraps up our little introduction and where we currently are in the hobby. We've got a pretty big chunk of news coming up, I do believe, so let's press on to that. Right, so as always, there is lots of news to get through. We did have a bit of a week off, but we'll skim through what we missed. So fire away, Matt.
Okay, so really, you know, the big news last week was Gene Steeler Courts. They're all out Saturday. Well, the first wave's out Saturday. The new codex, loads of awesome new kits. Very, very exciting.
Nice dice.
Very nice dice. Getting some of these from my Tyranids.
Yeah.
Excellent. So obviously we'll be back kind of next week with a proper kind of in-depth look at the Gene Steeler Cult. But yeah, it's all very exciting.
Yeah.
We've got a load of new stuff up for pre-order this coming weekend, though.
It is... Honestly, I think this is mental. I think I was shocked by how much stuff there is up for pre-order on Saturday. Games Workshop 12 months ago wouldn't have had this amount of stuff out in 1 week.
This would be like...
Six months worth of releases in 1 week.
Yeah.
So the big ticket item is Carrion Empire. We saw it at the open day. It is up for pre-order on Saturday. This is a battle box. It contains all your kind of rules on how to play Age of Sigmar, data cards for the units in the box, kind of all the lore behind this battle. It is about the Skaven battling the Flesh Eater Courts.
This is what I was going to get when I was going to do Skaven, which... I still kind of want this.
It's a little part you're still tempted.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe in the future, a Skaven force is definitely
2020.
Yeah, exactly. I might pick. Anyway, carry on.
This retails in £95. It contains 20 ghouls, 6 crypt horrors, which can be built in a few different ways. The aberrant Arc Regent, who's a new character type for the Flesh Eaters. On the Skaven side, you've got 3 Storm Fiends, a Doom Wheel, a Warp Lightning Cannon, and a Warlock Bombardier.
With a Doom Rocket.
He's got a special rule where he can overcharge it to do much more damage, but if you roll 1 to hit, he like blows himself up.
It's mental, yeah. It's really cool. It's his Doom Rocket and also his Warp Lightning spell. You can decide to overpower it, yeah, but then on a 1, you do 2d6 mortal wounds to yourself.
Yeah, but if it goes off, it does 2d6 mortal wounds to whatever you've shot it at. I mean,
keyword. If.
Yeah, well, I'd roll ones.
Well, we said that there's a bit of kind of a gambling element to the Gloomspike gets. I think Skaven take that and turn it up to 11.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The Flesh Eater Court sound really cool as well. They have got there's a certain build which can take zombie dragons as battle line.
That's really cool. If you want an elite army.
And these are essentially Age of Sigmar Bretonians. Because the Flesh Eater Courts believe that they're all princely knights and courtiers and errants and stuff.
Oh, do they?
They don't actually realise they're filthy, grubby, flesh-eating ghouls.
That's really cool.
I'm sure all the old Bretonian players would be happy about that.
Somebody did mention, actually, that the what I'm sure you're about to mention scenery piece is very Bretonian-ish.
Yep, there's lots of fleur-de-lises on the stuff. Speaking of that, we've got loads of stuff coming with those as well. So not just the Battle Box, we have got 2 Battle Tomes coming out alongside it. Mm-hmm. One for the Flesh Eater Courts, one for the Skaven. These are brand new Battle Tomes, condensing the entire Skaven range into one book with kind of abilities for each cult, but you can have them mixed in an army and not get penalised.
Yeah, this is really cool.
There'll be benefits for maybe taking a pure... a pure force of one clan, but you're not penalised by having it split, which is so good.
Yeah.
You know, you can have your big blocks of Skaven, as you should do, plus all the core stuff from the other clans. You could go super elite army if you wanted. So many options.
I think a lot of the bone, because it sounds like, say for example, you take a warlock in your list that might be very verminous heavy. He still gets some of the Skyra rules. The only thing that's really tying, if you go one particular clan, is your battle line changes. So, for example, if you wanted your Storm Fiends as battle line, then you would, you know, probably need to go Skyra heavy.
Yeah, I mean, that with based on the Gloomspike gets, that would probably be based on your general, not necessarily what the allegiance of the army is as well.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we haven't seen the book yet, just what they've put on the Warhammer community, but this looks ace. Likewise, Flesh Eater Courts have been massively updated from... You know, they were one of the first books, weren't they?
Yeah.
They're now going to have spells and summoning abilities. We read on the Warhammer community site that this fella in the box, the Arc Regent, can summon a unit of Royal Guard, which can be pretty much like any unit out of the book. So I don't know how the summoning mechanic works, but, you know, summoning second edition has been really, really good, so...
Maybe they have a set summoning pool at the beginning of the game, and it's up to you how you use that. If over the game you bring back loads of smaller units, or if you just go all in turn one, summon a big unit, but that's it, you can't summon anymore.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we find some more over the next few days in Warhammer community.
But... Yeah, because they've put the Skaven preview up today, but I'm going to assume that the Flesh Eater Courts is going to be tomorrow.
Yeah, no, so it's really, really cool. We've also got endless spells coming for each of those factions.
Mm-hmm.
Skaven one looks really cool. You've got kind of a bell. You've got some green swirling
warpstones
and things.
Yeah.
And then a big swarm of rats, similar to the spiders at the gits.
Mm-hmm.
Flesh Eater Courts have got some cavalry, some zombie cavalry coming up. A zombie war, which is very Witch Doctor from Diablo 3.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some like fleur-de-lises on the floor of there. And I can't remember off the top of my head what the third one is.
No,
but yeah, they get 3 endless spells. Each army also gets a scenery piece, which is something we discussed a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We think every army going forward is going to have one of these.
Yeah.
The Flesh Eater Courts get a charnel throne, which again fits in with their image of they think they're kings and lords, but it's really a decrepit old ruin. We don't know what effect that has on the battlefield. Maybe some kind of like morale boost or something, maybe.
Doesn't look out of place out of an old death army, that. So if
no,
you've
doesn't.
Got a very death-fiend board for your Nagashan friends... Yeah, it'd fit into that.
Remember a few weeks ago on the podcast when we said, oh, we hope that the Skaven get some kind of like Warren Hole kind of ability.
Yep.
Guess what? Skaven have got some kind of Warren Hole ability.
Screws and Brews exclusive again.
Gnaw holes, they look like they're, yeah, basically Skaven Warrens slash Realm Gates. that I guess lets you take units from one part of the battlefield to another.
Similar to the Sylvaneth ability, maybe to teleport between trees or bring reinforcements on or something. Yeah,
they look really cool. For the Skaven, I can't remember if there was for the flesh eater courts, but there's definitely for the Skaven.
Nice.
War scroll cards.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. And the warpstone dice, which look very nice.
Yeah, they do. I really like these dice. I think because the dice sometimes are a little bit more limited, aren't they, than everything else in the release.
Yeah.
So I think I'm definitely going to pick up some Skaven dice for future stuff.
Awesome.
Now you mention it, I don't remember seeing cards for flesh eater cards, no, but I mean, they must be getting them.
I'd assume so. Obviously, there's a lot of news in this post, yeah. Maybe they didn't mention them.
Yeah.
There's also going to be a re-release of Skaven Clan Rats, presumably just putting them around bases.
Yeah.
And there was a post on the Warhammer Facebook page today, I think a few of the older kits are just getting reboxed with round bases, which makes sense because...
Yeah.
That's been one of the things against starting a Skaven army, that you're going to have to buy like 100 round bases to put your Clan Rats on.
Yeah.
So that's a very hefty release, and that's just the Age of Sigmar stuff. We've also got Wave 2 of the Gene Stealer Cults.
Yeah.
We've got the Biophagus and the Abominant, two characters. They're £15 each. The Aberrants at £25 for 5, which is a great price. I thought they'd be a little bit more than that. They're the guys holding like street signs.
And whatever they can get their hands on,
pretty
that's
much
heavy.
Big brutish hybrid creatures. And the Achilles Ridge Runner is out for £27.50, which I think is the same price point as the Orc Buggies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a little kind of, I think it's 80 points. fast attack choice.
Very nice model.
Really, really cool. That's all the stuff that is coming up for pre-order on Saturday. It's going to be an expensive weekend.
You say that all, just like, that's it. Not much, really. Just 100 plastic kits and books. And
that brings us up to the end of all the stuff that we saw at the open day, apart from Blackstone Fortress, Lair of the Amble, or whatever it was called.
Yeah. And the Necromunda Ambles, they're Forge World, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think a few of those bits... We're kind of at the weekender, so we'll probably see them in a few weeks.
Yeah.
But that's essentially, 3 months' worth of releases we've seen since the Vigilus Open Day, leading us up nicely to another 3 months of stuff coming. This weekend, we've got LVO, the Las Vegas Open, and they are going to have another one of their studio reveals there.
Now, if I remember right, the one last year was brilliant. Was that not the one, or was that Adepticon, actually, where they announced the Dominus Knight? That could have been Adepticon.
I think it was Adepticon, but they did have a big preview at the last one. I can't remember off the top of my head exactly what it was. But it was, it was pretty awesome anyway.
It wasn't Custodes, was it? No, that was the Warhammer Open Day, New Year Open Day, wasn't it? Custodes.
Yeah.
But, so I imagine we'll see the next 3 months of releases at the LVO this weekend. It's on Thursday in the States, late on. I'm not sure what time that translates to in the UK.
I think last time I remember waking up to all the news.
Yeah. Yeah, because of the time difference, it's probably going to be early hours in the morning.
I'll be setting my alarm extra early so I can get a post on Sprues and Brews anyway.
Excellent. Which we should reveal in the 3 months. We send leaders on to May-ish, maybe? Where we... people at the Heresy Weekend this past weekend, in the flyer, it announced the date of Warhammer Fest 2019 at the Ricoh Arena in Coventry again. And this is the 11th and 12th of May. Now, apparently they're making some massive changes to this, trying to improve it. I think the last few events have been brilliant. Warhammer Fest was great last year.
It was Stormcast, wasn't it? We saw all new Stormcast.
It was Soulcast.
Second edition of Age Sigmar.
So if it's, the same, you've got the same kind of vibe as the recent open days, but with the size of the venue, the Ricoh Arena, I think this is one definitely worth getting tickets to.
Yeah.
I think we'll see Primaris.
I think we might see Space Marines. I think we might see Black Legion as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I can sense a Primaris release somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So that is LVO. But this weekend we had a big event as well, the Horus Heresy Weekender.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
oh boy.
Unfortunately, we didn't get to attend this ourselves. Tickets go super quickly. I'd love to go to one because it seems like a great event for fans of the Horus Heresy and nice, shiny Forge World kits. The big kind of reveal, which was actually teased a couple of days before on Warhammer Community, but obviously seen in the flesh in some much better pictures, was the Primarch of the Blood Angels, Sanguinius.
Oh, yeah.
And you could buy him as well at the event.
You could, in two different flavours.
Yeah.
So he comes on a standard base for, I can't remember how much it was
£80.
£80 on the standard base.
£45 really cool. For the extra.
Yeah, 125 on his limited base, where he looks like he's fighting a demon prince. Looks a bit like the Forge World Khorne demon prince that they do.
They do, but these demons aren't demons we've seen before.
No, and there's a... Well, we'll come to that in a little bit, but yeah, hopefully some new demon-y bits coming in. It should be a little teaser of what we've got to come. But what do you think of the model, guys? I mean, we saw some initial pictures and response on Twitter seemed to be mixed. I think once we saw some proper 360 shots and, you know, some of the detail on the model.
Yeah, I think that's it. I find that with a lot of the Games Workshop and Forge World photos, the first like sneak peek you see of it isn't mind-blowing. Although I did really like this model. It's not until you see the shots from different angles and like the clear resin, unpainted resin, you really appreciate how good a sculpt it is. They just knock it out of the park every time now. I mean, Valdor was my favourite model Forge World had done for the Horus Heresy series. I thought he was fantastic, but he was a bit Marmite. People liked him, people didn't. But this guy, I've seen some close-up shots of the actual unpainted kit, and the detail's really, really good.
Yeah, now we originally saw him with a sword. He does come with his spear as well, which is cool.
Yeah, he does. And I think if you've seen the pictures of him on the scenic base with the spear, it just looks great. Such a good display piece.
I think the scenic base swung a lot of people because suddenly his pose made a little bit more sense. And it seemed to gel a bit better. I mean, I don't see a problem with his pose without the scenic base at all. Whether or not he's my style of Primark, not really, but he's a fantastic model. Really, really nice.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you should have your hands on him this week, Joe.
Yeah, he's at the post office. I've ordered one off eBay for a reasonable price, so... I missed the delivery today, but he's in reserve, so I'll go and pick him up tomorrow. Deep striking in tomorrow. We should have a unboxing video up before the weekend, I guess.
Brilliant. So that was the kind of the big item. We mentioned the other things that are up early, like the Paladins and the...
The Crimson Paladins, the Night Lords.
There was one other unit there, wasn't there, that they said you could buy on the day and announced in the morning, and that was the Space Wolf unit.
Death something, aren't they? Death Company.
They've all kind of wolf head masks. They're kind of the precursor of the Wolfen, really, aren't they? Yeah.
They remind me a bit of the Wolf Lord Chaplains, the Space Wolf Chaplains. They are nice. I think the Forge World sculpts have that sort of almost hand sculpted type appeal to them. They don't look so clean and tidy as the Games Workshop. I think it adds to the flavour.
They do use digital sculpting now as well, which is strange. But I think they use a mixture of everything, don't they, with the models. Like you say, they do have a different aesthetic.
Yeah, that's it,
The Citadel stuff. But then you've got different sculptors working on it as well. Everyone's got their own style. Even if you're sculpting on a computer, you put your own touches to it, don't you?
Yep.
That was the kind of the new models. Now, Sanguinius's rules are going to be in Malevolence, which is book 8 of the Horus Heresy series. Now, unfortunately, they weren't printed in time for the event. They were taking pre-orders at the show with an estimated release window of March, and people who ordered at the show will get it a week earlier than everyone else, which, you know, seems fair enough.
Yeah, that seems fair.
It does seem a shame that they didn't get the books on time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is coming. They're taking pre-orders. You know, it's been a long time coming this.
Can we hold it against them with the amount of stuff that they suddenly revealed last week and said, oh, by the way, you can buy it the weekend? I think they're allowed.
I think as well, the Horus Heresy, they've been a bit slow with the release cycle from the Horus Heresy, the support for, you know, new, I think they're changing that now. Like, we're starting with Malevolence. You said they've got playtesters with this one.
Yeah, so I think they've obviously, you know, with the sad pattern on Bly, they've had to get a new writing team in. They are focusing a lot more on having external playtesters to make sure the books are balanced. You know, I'd much prefer to see a balanced book come out than one rushed out really quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're revisiting the Talons of the Emperor list, so obviously that's been tuned and looked at again.
Yeah, so I think they've had some fairly substantial points cuts on the Custodes, which are probably well needed.
Points hikes.
Points hikes on the Custodes.
You're thinking of 40k.
About a 10% point increase on most units, I believe.
Yeah.
They're still really, really strong even with that, I imagine.
Yeah, they've added all the extra. We've seen the new units that weren't in the original Talons of the Emperor list, like the Orion gunship.
And a new variant of the gunship as well.
Oh, yeah. I've not seen that one. With a big cannon on it. And also the Venatari. The
jump up guys, yeah. So that's going to be a full Talons of the Emperor list. They said they were going to release it as a red book, the kind of army box. but because it's got so much content changed from Inferno, it's essentially, you know, it's in a whole new list to replace that one. Which, you know, I don't mind it when they do that. A little bit more so when it's in a big £80 leather-bound book, but I'd rather the game be balanced than, you know, yeah, some well, lists going ahead.
That's it. Inferno was before they revisited the 7th edition rewrite. They did their own sort of version of 7th edition, didn't they? So, yeah. I'm feeling quite optimistic about the Horus Heresy series for Forge now and the support it's going to get. I think I read somewhere that they were planning on, someone from the seminar said they were going to work on releasing one book a year, and they've got three writers working on the books now. So,
it's, I mean, we've obviously got the Siege of Terror coming, haven't we, from Black Library, so there's going to be a resurgence in people talking about the Horus Heresy.
I have a feeling that the Siege of Terror rule books are going to be a way out yet.
Yeah. Well, we've got some details in the next couple of books coming, because the announcement of the show. So obviously Malevolence covers the Blood Angels, the White Scars, the Demons, and a redone Custodes list. Four armies, essentially. White Scars with a range of new models that look really, really nice, including a Jagati Khan riding a jet bike, which I can't wait to see.
That's going to be good, yeah.
Again, whether he comes in two flavours, with him on foot and him on a jet bike, similar to the Sanguinius dual release. I suppose they'll have to, won't they, if you've got options for him on foot and on a jet bike.
Yeah.
Blood Angels got a load of new stuff, including Contemptors with jump packs.
Contemptors with jump packs, yeah, I can't remember what the pattern of jump the Contemptors called. They get another unit called the Dawn Guard, which are, I think they're another jump pack unit, and they get the Tears of Blood or Tears of the Angel or something, which is another destroyer unit.
So they sound really cool. Demons get an entire army list. And from their display board, which had kind of Slaaneshi units on them as well, like Jay said earlier, they're not really the demons that we know now. They're still kind of forming in the warp.
Yeah.
So obviously elements of different gods, maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting. I got a good look at the demon on the base of Sanguinius. It looks nothing like one of the four gods that we've seen. It almost looks a bit like, do you know the Hellboy demon type things?
Oh, right,
lots of like Cthulhu type stuff.
Nice.
So I think these are Ruinstorm demons, and from what I've read, this is a new faction of demons, and they're going to have some unique rules. There's talks of a Primarch level power level type leader demon.
Well, they said what it was on Warhammer Community. It is Cabanda. It's got a profile in the book.
Ah, right, okay. And there was also a mechanic they were talking about where they're strong to start off with, well, all the Chaos Energies, but then as the battle goes on, they lose some power and become a bit weaker.
Cool.
So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. Another faction.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely be ordering that when it goes on order, and I think we'll play through the campaign, hopefully on a video as well. We'll have a video series.
Yeah, well,
for that.
That's it. I mean, we've got our telegamers going, but my plan was always to add to my existing armies as we go in between. I've got a big Custodian force anyway, and I've got quite a big Blood Angels Heresy force, which I'll be adding to over the next few months.
So what we need to do now is bully friend of the show Lee to do a
White Scars. He's a big White Scar fan. I remember when we were kids, he converted up some White Scars from old Space Wolf models. They look very good.
Awesome. So they also announced details of Book 9, which presumably comes out next year with this annual release schedule they want to do. The working title is Conquest, but they did stress that isn't the final title of the book. This pits the Dark Angels against the Night Lords.
Cool.
Now, obviously, we've seen some of the Night Lord models, so, you know, it probably is, you know, on the cards that this will come out next year. Probably, I mean, they tend to try and release their stuff at their events, don't they? So,
yeah.
Let's say, in theory, Heresy Weekend of next year.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
Things change, but that's probably the window they're looking for. Dark Angels, of course. I know you're a big fan, Dave.
Yeah, I am, yeah. I do like the Dark Angels. I mean, I'd love to see the Lion. And he's one of the only Primarchs left now, isn't he? That's not got a model.
Him and Jakati Khan, are the only Primarchs left.
So, could that tempt me back into Heresy?
Probably
not.
Ooh. Well, there's also a parallel storyline in that book as well, pitting the Adeptus Titanicus, who, you know, they've had a few more kits since they came out. Like
Mechanicus.
Adeptus Titanicus.
Oh, it is Titanicus. Yeah. Oh, right, okay.
So, like, the Warbringer, some new weapons variants will probably be out by then, some new knight variants are coming out.
Yeah, didn't we hear some rumours about extra classes of Titan?
Yep, between the size of Reavers and Warlords.
Yeah.
The whole Adeptus Titanicus army list. Nice excuse to use those Titan Guard that I've got. you wouldn't fit many Titans in 3,000 points, but I can probably do a Titanicus list with a Reaver and a Warhound. And they are pitted against the Dark Mechanicum.
Cool.
Which is the kind of the first time we've seen them. Yeah. Well, we've got the one model, haven't we?
You've got the little spidery type character who's supposed to be solid. Yeah.
But yeah, proper army list for the Dark Mechanicum. I will be all over that.
Yeah, that will be interesting. There was a couple of Mechanicum units. Is it Mechanicum in the Heresy or Mechanicus?
It's the Mechanicum of Mars, which then becomes the Adeptus Mechanicus.
Yeah, so we saw some Mechanicum, another knight.
Yep, and the Ordinator, big drill.
Yeah. So they do like the drills, don't they?
They do like the drills. So that's Book 9 Conquest. Horus Heresy is looking really strong at the minute with this new team writing it, loads of ace models.
I think it's a good time to go back. It's a shame because I don't think the plastic kits are that readily available anymore, are they?
Not at the minute, but it wouldn't surprise me if for one of these sets we get a boxed game. You know, they could do a Malevolence boxed game with Blood Angels versus Demons and package in some of the demon frames.
Yeah.
Which would be cool. Maybe with, again, a unique character for each side like we've seen in the past. Obviously, it's just speculation, but it wouldn't surprise me. It also, you know, book 9, all of the chapters are covered.
Yes.
All of the factions are covered, really. We've got the Dark Mechanicum, we've got Adeptus Titanicus, we've got the Talons of the Emperor. Sisters of Silence might need some new kits.
I'd heard rumours about new kits for Sisters of Silence, so they must be coming in the later book.
But really, that brings us up to Terror, I'd say.
Just the Emperor, Sigleite.
Yep.
And then some of the Chaos Infused Primarchs.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of years off, we could be at the Eternity Gate. Yep. Who knows? Another big kind of showing at the event was Adeptus Titanicus, as we're talking about Titans. And the support for this is phenomenal. Now, I think when they first brought out the game, I don't think they were sure what kind of feedback, what kind of support, if people would pick it up. Because obviously they're expensive kits, really, singularly. They did a run of the Grandmaster Edition, which they thought had, you know, tied them over. Well, that sold out in half a day.
Yeah, remember we were in the seminar and they were talking about the price of it. And we thought, you know, how high can this thing go? Is that going to be too expensive? And it sold out.
Half a day is probably optimistic. It's probably a couple of hours it sold out. They said on the stream that they got another kind of second wind when the kind of army box came out over Christmas, the £100 box.
Well, the Warlord Reaver and two Warhounds.
It's a bargain, isn't it?
We got it for like 80 odd quid from Melbourne.
I think they said they sold about 10,000 copies of that, which, you know, it's for what is essentially a niche game, that's a lot of models and a lot of, you know, each of them, if you say someone collecting a new army... It's really good.
Yeah.
They said that they ordered, because they did the transfers that we saw at the show recently, that were recently released. They ordered enough stock for a year, they've sold out already. So because of this support for the game, lots of resources have been put into Adeptus Titanicus. So we're seeing the first resin upgrade weapons, which surprised me a little bit, because I thought we'd see a third plastic frame for each
item. Yeah, I was expecting plastic. These are the Gatling weapons for the Warlords.
Yeah, so you've got the Quake Cannon, the arm-mounted Gatling Blasters, the shoulder-mounted Gatling Blasters, Vulcan Megabolt for a Reaver, and a Warp Missile for a Reaver.
Yeah.
They kind of make sense, because the Reaver arm weapons aren't as magnetizable, just the Carapace weapon, so easily release a resin one and swap that. Obviously, the arm weapons for the Warlord... Sticks and magnets in, you're good to go.
Yeah.
I think the fans probably prefer a resin upgrade they can buy rather than a whole new Titan at 60 quid or a upgrade frame at 20 odd quid. Yeah. Now, I imagine it's probably not being far off for the upgrade weapons, but, you know, at least you've got the options of buying, you know, one Quake Cannon, one Gatling Blaster, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
We don't know when they're out, but I imagine soon-ish. The Grandmaster Edition is being reprinted and will be coming back soon. Again, if you want to get into the game... You've got a few options now. You can just get the standalone rule box. You can get the Maniple, the Battle Group.
Battle Group, yeah.
For £100 or for, I think it was £175, you get the rule book, all your tokens and everything. Three sets of the scenery, I believe, two Warlords, two sets of Knights. So if you think the Warlords alone are 120 quid, or maybe more, 130 quid for the two of them.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting... Maybe you're paying for the Warlords and the rules, and you're getting two sets of knights and a load of scenery for free.
It's definitely the way to get into it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it depends what kind of maniple you're building. Some people might prefer the battle group because it gives you more options.
Yeah.
But, I think it selling out so quickly has probably harmed it a bit until we have this other entry point into the game. But, yeah, that's back soon, which is cool. Again, if you want it, I'd pick it up, though, because this stuff seems to sell out super quick. We have got new scenery on the way. The Civitas Imperialis Spires. Now, these look really, really nice, kind of cathedral-style spires. They are modular and fit with the current Adeptus Titanicus scenery, which I was showing you guys recently.
Yeah,
it fits together like Duplo, so you build it in little kind of rectangle and square shapes, and you can stack it to your heart's content.
I haven't had a chance to see these
yet. Have you not?
No, I've not been.
They're really cool. And these spires stack on the top of them. So again, you can just build your modular battlefield.
Build like a big cathedral.
Oh, yeah. People have already said they might use it to make Imperator Titans.
Yes.
Because they have big spires on the backs of them.
Yeah.
Really nice kits. To go with them, they're releasing two new tiles for the Adeptus Titanicus Realm of Battle.
Yep.
So that will give us four tiles in total, looking brilliant.
Yeah, they are very nice. They're expensive, but they are very nice. I think if you've got a couple of guys you play with, you can chip in and get yourself a nice Adeptus Titanicus board.
Yeah, they're really good. There were more transfers on the way, starting with the Tiger Eyes.
The Furians, yeah.
Obviously, I think all the Legions will have transfers, but obviously, as we said, they ordered a year's worth and they sold out. They're having to print some more. Really good. We've also got a new source book coming out for Adeptus Titanicus, The Doom of Moloch, which is very knight-focused. So it features heraldry of titans and knights. It's all about knight households, armies of knights. The plastic support is going to be the new knight models that we haven't seen yet. So the various, the Cerastus variants.
Yeah, Castigor and all those ones.
I wonder if we'll see the big chunky guy as well.
Oh, the
the big one with massive
the
guns.
Siege knight, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's maybe part of the reason why we've seen resin upgrade weapons, because the kind of sprue budget is on knights, because you can only make so many frames. And strategy card for your knights as well, which is really cool. So yeah, lots of Titanicus stuff on the way. Loads of goodies to look forward to. The rough release date for all this stuff is the summer. So, again, maybe two releases a year, one in the summer, one in the winter for Titanicus. I think that's pretty good support.
Yeah.
Maybe with plastic kits scattered between that.
Yeah.
But yes, something to look forward to if you're a Titanicus fan. And then the last bit of news we had from the event was Necromunda.
Yeah, this is getting a bit more love.
So, obviously, the initial gangs out of the original game are all out now.
Mm-hmm.
And people thought they might go for the expansion gangs, like the Spires and the Ratlings and Ratskin Renegades even, and all those kind of factions. Forge would have said, nah, they don't want to do that. Let's do something new. So it's brand new stuff. There's loads of concept art for guys on weird alien creatures. We've got bounty hunters. We've got the guilds. We've got a new squat. Making me what, two squats that you can buy now.
Two squats.
Is it the Dust Raiders or Dust something? Or they look almost like Wraith-type creatures.
I much prefer this than them retreading the old ground.
Yeah.
They can go to town. If we guess they're going to get six gangs like we have done for the first season, I suppose, there's all sorts of things they can do.
Well, look at Age of Sigmar. They could have just rehashed all the old races. They added new stuff. It's been very successful.
Yeah.
Apply that to Necromunda.
And let's not forget as well the Cordor Rats.
Oh, yeah, the Bomb Rats.
Bomb Rats.
They look really cool.
They are so cool, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if you're into Necromunda, it'll be nice to see all this brand new stuff. And it's, pretty exciting. So, yeah, that's been a heck of a week for news, hasn't it, Dave?
It's been an awful lot of news in such a short space of time. Obviously, the Heresy Weekender helped a great deal with that. So, yes, lots to look forward to, regardless of what system. I think when it comes to variety, this podcast has hit all the bases.
Yes.
Necromunda, Titanicus, Age of Sigmar, 40k. It's all here. Now, we are later on in the podcast going to be talking about the expansions as Matt just gently touches his copy of Titan Death. However, hold your horses, because we're not going to cheat here. We're going to move on to our top three. So we'll come back to that in just a moment. So as mentioned, our next feature is going to be our ever popular top three. So our top three for this week, or actually technically last week, which is carried over into this week, is our top three expansions for Games Workshop products. So there's been quite a few source books, supplements, expansions, whatever you want to call them. We've included them all in this. So we're going to pick out our top three. I thought we'd sneak this in before we started talking about Titan Death and Gondor at War, so not to sway any decisions.
Makes sense.
Yeah, there you go. So, Matt, do you want to start us with your third choice?
Ooh, my third choice. You've caught me off guard now, Dave. My notes are out of sync. So my third choice for expansions is Diggernob for Gork and Morka.
Diggernob.
Now, this was the first and only, sadly, expansion for Gork and Morka. But what a mighty expansion it was. Bringing the forces of the Rebel Grots, fighting against the slavery enforced by their orc overlords to bring liberation to the Gretchen type. It was awesome. It also has some muties and newies in there, but, you know, who cares about them? It was all about grots racing around, bullying the orcs that have been enslaving them for years.
Ace, well, that's that. You've gone right back to nostalgia there with that first choice. Flipping heck. Jay, what's your third choice?
My third choice, I don't know, this is probably as far back as that one, but it's a bit far back, is Battlefleet Gothic Armada.
Oh, ooh, yeah, yeah.
So the Battlefleet Gothic rulebook and Armada, they're really, really cracking. They tell the story of the Battlefleet Gothic campaign, which I think is one of the precursors to one of Abaddon's Black Crusade,
yeah,
where he's trying to steal a Blackstone fortune. But there's lots of background and lore about the different factions of the Imperial Navy and about different classes of ship and battles. Battlefleet Gothic Armada took it to the next level. It added the battleship for the Eldar, the Voidstalker, fantastic ship. It also added, added Necrons, Dark Eldar,
Tau
Merchant Fleet was in Battlefleet Gothic, yep, Armada, I think. The only bad thing about Battlefleet Gothic Armada and Battlefleet Gothic rulebook was they opened like lengthways, so they're a bit awkward to read.
If you're someone who's really anal and measures rivets like me, yeah, it's going to bug you on your shelf when you've got a book the wrong aspect.
Yeah, they were really cool books. I really liked all the technical drawings and yeah, stuff. Yeah, well,
I was just going to say, the artwork in those books was cracking. Really, really good. I mean, the artwork from the modern codexes and rule books is very, very good, but some of the old black and white artwork is just very, very good. So.
And I liked how the rules were all like you would see on a ship sort of specification. Like all the weapon systems.
Oh, it was nicely done, the aesthetic of the book, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, its spiritual successor, Drop Fleet Commander, has kind of kept elements of that in its rulebook.
Yes, I think it is also an awkwardly opening rulebook.
It is, yeah.
Must be something about spaceship combat.
Well, Andy Chambers was behind both games.
There you go, Andy Chambers' fault. Whilst Matt and Jay have gone quite off, like with all the different my top three is quite kind of down the line. Big expansions.
And Dave down the line, Jennings.
Yeah. My third choice is a little bit of a cop-out. If I had to pick one, I can pick one in particular.
FIFA 2016.
Is Warhammer End Times.
The End Times? Which one?
Now, personally, because I was elves at the time, it was Cain.
Okay.
But I think I could get away with just saying the End Times as an expansion in its whole
top
entire
four
self.
Expansions.
Because, I mean, I've said this on the podcast many times, but how many times do we get to see an expansion that basically ends the world?
Yeah, I mean, the End Times were a brilliant, brilliant event. It kind of came out of nowhere as well. I mean, there was teasers, wasn't there, in the last few kind of expansions for Warhammer.
And I think it just blew it out of the water. It wasn't just about the rules, the lore. I mean, there was so much lore packed into those books. It was incredible.
Yeah.
So, so good. Yeah.
The way they did it as well, with like a source book and then a book of rules as well for each of those tomes, was a really nice way of doing it. I mean, they started big, didn't they, with the Return of Nagash.
Yeah, they did.
They didn't get much bigger than that in the Warhammer world.
No, so yeah, I thought the End Times expansion is, yeah, well, it's made it into my top three, so there you go. Your second choice, Matt?
Awesome. Well, similar to that, really. Now, back in the Mist of Time, your average army would have a couple of squads of troops, maybe a Predator. A Dreadnought would be a big chunky thing for your army.
I remember when Dreadnoughts were things to be feared.
Then they were. And then something came along. Well, really, two things came along at the same time, which blew that open to a whole new world, which we'd only really seen before in Epic 40K. And that was Apocalypse. The big expansion to Warhammer 40,000, allowing you to use apocalyptic units. Alongside this came the Baneblade in plastic. I think it was at the time the biggest kit Games Workshop do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it is now, but it's definitely up there.
Yeah.
And yeah, this just blew everyone away.
The Stomper as well, I think, came out. Was it the Stomper?
Yeah, the Stomper came out.
It was around about the same time-ish, wasn't it? Maybe a little bit later, because I think I had to scratch build my first Stomper before it came out properly. And yeah, this was big on every level. I remember going to the games day, they announced it, and they had a limited edition backpack and massive templates, and I think you could get the book that day, and it was so massive dice.
Couldn't get the
void
grenade. In plastic, it was like just a half moon. I think they released that.
But no, this was such a good expansion. Now, some would argue it absolutely broke the game, but it wasn't about a balanced game, was it? It was about putting all your models on the table, blowing stuff up, and having a day just rolling dice. I mean, we had a few games of Apocalypse, didn't we?
I remember our very first game of Apocalypse, it was just where was it? I can't remember even where it was. I think it was in here. I think it was just stretched all the way.
Have you got my boards and your boards? We had like a 12 foot long table.
I think I used Blood Angels in that.
Yeah. You did. I used, what did I bring? Demons. I brought all my demons. I've got a lot of demons.
Yeah.
Dave brought all his Tau.
Chris was there.
Orcs, yeah.
It was epic.
It took us, 2 days to play the game?
Yeah.
But it was such a brilliant game.
Yeah, it was amazing. Really, really cool.
You know, for having a winner as such, it wasn't that kind of
thing. No.
It was just moving loads of models, rolling literally buckets of dice and just having fun, really.
Yeah. Awesome. Your second choice, Jay?
My second choice was, they don't tend to do it anymore because they, well, it'll be self-evident, but in 3rd edition 40K, they used to get codexes. So there was a Space Marine codex, there was a Kraftworld Eldar codex. But then they also released codex supplements. So there was a Kraftworld Eldar codex, which added extra flavour and fluff to, and you know, changed a few units. And then you got like a Blood Angel supplement, I think there was. And was there a Space Wolf? It might have just been a full Space Wolf codex, actually.
Mm.
So it was those little supplements. Because I think in 3rd edition, the lore was quite thin in the codexes. There wasn't a lot of background, but these supplements added a little bits in. So
yeah, I think they'd got a different strategy for them. It was pretty much just the rules, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, they're quite thin.
I remember the first... Actually, this might end up being my second choice, purely because Matt's already said my second choice. But I remember in a copy of White Dwarf, so White Dwarf's kind of come full circle because they're doing it again now. But I remember getting a Kislev Warhammer Fantasy supplement.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
In a
with the Ice Queen
copy.
On the back.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
And I was thinking, this is awesome. Like, you get like a rule book. Like, it wasn't very big, but it was like you say, a supplement for that, just that army.
Yeah. So they don't tend to do it now because you tend to get fully fleshed out army books now.
Well, I'd argue you get that within your Codex or Battletome now, don't you? Like, the, you know, back in the day, the Trogoth Herd could have been a supplement book, where now it's an option in the book proper.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of getting it again with, like, the Crimson Fist being in White Dwarf.
And Vigilus as well, with the kind of alternate list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was good, because it added a new lease of life to your army, and then you could, like... I mean, I had the Kraftworld Elder one, because I used to really like the Ulfa Eldar. And yeah, just changed your Kraftworld Elder. Your Ulfa Guardians were a bit better than Samhain Guardians, and your Ulfa Tanks were a bit better than...
But you had negatives as well.
Yeah,
so
I think
plus and...
It was a lot like the different army traits you get now. So I thought it was quite cool. And then in 4th edition, it disappeared. I remember being quite upset, actually, when the 4th edition Eldar Codex came out, because you didn't have...
Or your special for some...
No, there wasn't an additional Kraftworld Eldar Codex.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, my second choice was going to be Apocalypse as well. Not only because at the time it was, I think, groundbreaking. And like you say, it brought plastic Bane Blades and Stompers to the battlefield.
Strength D
weapons. Think of what it's... Thanks to Apocalypse, we now have Dominus Knights, we now have plastic Primarchs, we now have Flyers, because I think Flyers were relatively new around Apocalypse,
I think since then, Games Workshop have been pushing the boundaries of what you can do with plastic kits, and that's certainly helped, because let's face it, you're only going to buy these awesome models if you can use them in a game, where before that, Forgewood, for example, the display pieces rather than gaming pieces, they had rules, but... You could use in a balanced game.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Apocalypse was balanced, but I think they've learned that people like those cool things.
Just bring what you've got and roll some dice.
Yeah. And now you can use those kits.
That is open gaming. You know, in Age of Sigmar and 40K, they're keen to push those three elements, aren't they? The narrative, the match play, and the open play, so that you can just play through different scenarios and different size lists and things, just for funsies.
Just for funsies.
So yeah. So unfortunately, I haven't got another one to replace it with. Maybe we can go with Warhammer Fantasy Kislev. Never had a Kislev army.
That's a good choice.
But, there you go.
I'm going to really annoy you, Dave, by having your number one as well.
Yeah,
I guarantee both of you have got this for number one.
Yeah,
and it's Triumph and Treachery.
Yeah, it's Triumph and Treachery. We might as well just do this. Number one.
Think this is the best expansion Games Workshop we've done.
Yeah.
If Ben Johnson's listening, please do Triumph and Treachery for Age of Sigmar.
You've teased it with all these one or two scenarios, but just do it. Just get a brand new
boxed game with scenery and coins, same as
the little gambit things you could play to interfere with people. No, you're not firing your cannons at me, Dave. No, your wizard cannot cast that spell against this one.
That treacherous Dave was born.
Treacherous Dave.
Enjoying games of
Triumph. So, it's a bit of background here. Whenever we played a game of Triumph and Treachery, the first game, I think we lasted that long, Dave was, I'll come to your aid. I'll help you in this fight. And then immediately he backstabbed
you. Boom, purple sword. What the hell?
I think I'm going to have to turn the volume down for this section. You can tell how excited we are. The audio is spiking. But I mean, it was brilliant. Oh, man. We stopped playing normal games.
Yeah, we just played Triumph and Treachery.
Because it was brilliant. And they were really balanced. Like, at the end, there wasn't really many coming between us.
It self-balanced itself because you know that you're going to get backstabbed by your by treacherous Dave.
Yeah.
So,
but you still trusted me.
Got a few entries in my book of grudges, you have.
nothing balances a game than someone trying to get their revenge on someone.
Yeah. Oh, man, it was... But like you said, the presentation of it as well.
Yeah,
it came amazing. In like a little box, didn't it, with the book and your cards, your coin bag with your coins that you used to collect. And you could spend your... They were like how you won the game, but you could spend them to... I'll give you 100 coins if you don't...
Yeah.
If you don't use that spell on me. And then you take the money and use the spell on me anyway.
Yeah, really nice rule book.
Yeah,
and actually teased some Age of Sigmar stuff as well. A lot of the Age of Sigmar original scenery was first seen in the Triumph and Treachery book, like the Realm Gates and the kind of arcane ruins and stuff.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, the rate Games Workshop are releasing stuff nowadays, we could see a Triumph and Treachery for Age of Sigmar.
I really hope we do.
We could.
Battle Royale.
Awesome. Bring it back. Bring it back, guys.
And it could work quite well now with the sort of alternating turns that
we've already got Triumph and Treachery rules in the main rule book, but I'd love to see it fleshed out. So, like I say, a boxed game with all the tokens and coins and maybe some little scenery pieces.
We even did a podcast and a post on the website where we've converted Triumph and Treachery into 40K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just fire rules and we'll write the rules. We'll do it for you. Don't worry about it. Yeah, excellent. Well, that's... Have we got any honourable mentions?
I'm going to say the Eye of Terror campaign. It's similar to what Jay said with the supplement list. This was a little campaign which I think they ran through White Dwarf on the website back in the day to determine the events of Abaddon's 13th Black Crusade, which I'm sure he's had about five of now, but we'll forget that. But it had alternate lists, including the Lost and the Damned, the kind of traitor guardsmen.
Of all conversions of the Cajun Guard in there.
Who you know, we've seen echoes of now in Blackstone Fortress.
There was an awful strike force.
Mm-hmm.
Were the Wolfen in there as well?
The Wolfen were in there, and also an Emperor's Children.
Emperor's Children were,
I think. Similar to that, was it Storm of Chaos, which was similar book for Warhammer Fantasy, which was Valden, who was like the Sigmar reincarnated, versus Archaon on his horse.
It was,
big. And that added the Lothian Sea Guard. I think there was a Nurgle army.
That was
a Skaven Pestilence force.
Yeah, it was.
And there was a cool...
The
cool,
Kane army was in there as well, wasn't it?
Well, it was a Slaanesian Dark Elf army, which was quite cool. You could have Demon Princes of Slaanesh leading Dark Elf.
This is Marathi playing with fire and leading directly to what she is now in Age of Sigmar, which is cool.
Yeah.
Mm. Also, I think it was a precursor to Endless Spells.
Yes.
No, that wasn't that book.
In Storm of Chaos.
In Storm of Magic.
Yeah, Storm of Magic.
Oh, right.
With all
the
fulcrums and things like that.
Oh, sorry. My bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was really good. And, you know, I think we've seen bits of that in Vigilus.
It's
highly anticipated that we'll see the second half of Vigilus very soon. I'm hoping that we get, you know, that kind of stuff for the other factions that weren't in the first book.
Yeah.
I'd love to see something like that for Sigmar.
Yeah.
A new campaign, but with new, they say, alternate lists and new fun stuff you can do.
You can do it with the War Scroll Battalions. Add a bit of fluff and flavour, a few rules.
One honourable mention for me was some of the source books that came for Lord of the Rings, the original Lord of the Rings books. There was one for Balin's Tomb. I remember really liking the Gondor one because I had a Gondor arm at the time. Yeah, I really enjoyed those. The only irritating thing with those is it's kind of a problem you have now where you had so many different books.
Yeah.
For your army, you didn't just have one book; you had like multiple. But it was cool anyway. So that about brings us to the end of our top three. We will be coming back for your top threes over the last couple of weeks. But before that, we're going to have a overview of the brand new expansions. Right, so not only have we got... Well, the whole reason for the top three this week is because we didn't get just the one expansion. We had two expansions for two very popular game systems. The first one, which Matt has open in front of us, is for Adeptus Titanicus, so we had Titan Death. And then the second is the first expansion. Well, I mean, they have rule books, didn't they? The Hobbit in Lord of the Rings, but the first proper expansion for Middle-earth strategy battle game, which is Gondor at War, which is great for fans of Gondor.
Yes.
So, Matt, shall we start with Titan Death?
Yeah, so Titan Death, if you're not aware, is all about the battle of the Betagarm and Starcluster. Now, this was a strategic sector, kind of the gateway to Terror, let's say. Especially during the throes of the Heresy, when the Ruin Storm was cutting off vast swathes of the galaxy. This was the system that Horus was using as a staging area to assemble his troops before he moved on to Terror. So obviously, in the opinion of the Imperium, the people of Terror needed to make sure that this was held at best. The Sigilite didn't believe they could hold it. Dorn, who was obviously taking command of the Emperor's forces while Daddy Dearest was busy in the Webway, felt that they needed to send a substantial force to hold off Horus for as long as possible. This substantial force was the biggest Titan battle in the history of the Imperium. It's called the Titan Death because a hell of a lot of Titans died during this battle.
Titans were harmed in the...
What
forces did they send them? What legios were present?
A lot of forces were sent. I mean, the book contained rules for the Warp Runners, the Nova Guard, the Firebrands and the Imperial Hunters against the Death Heads, the Godbreakers, the Tiger Eyes and the Death Stalkers. I believe, lore-wise, elements of every Titan Legion were sent there. Any available engines at all were sent there. It was pretty much a case of... there's Horus and his army. Let's send all available Titans there to hold him off.
So Ignatum was there, Legio Griffonicus. Yeah. What's the Legio Mortis, is it?
Mortis, yeah. I think there'd be elements more these legions, but obviously the ones listed in here would be the main ones involved in the campaign. Mm-hmm. So the book's really good. It goes through the kind of the history of that. We've got some nice kind of like star charts and a timeline of what's happening kind of on the system.
All these planet pictures are reminding me of old classic like space books I used to have.
Yeah, it's really nice. And the book is stunning. I mean, it's all of the kind of specialist game ones are really nice with bookmarks and, you know, obviously high production values. Mm. I believe this was £24, I believe, which is a really good price as
What's
well.
That campaign book. Rules for 8 legions plus a lot of background.
Yeah, so you get the background first, then it goes over the legions. Each of them gets some unique ability, like a lot of them can swap out one class titan for another. Others have unique weapons or certain kind of formations they can have, certain stratagems they can take. They all get individual traits that they can have as well, which is really nice. Now, it does mention in here that obviously there's a lot of legions that haven't been kind of featured in the series yet, so feel free to adapt the kind of fighting style for one of these for your own one. Obviously, Legio Ignatum are not featured as of yet, so I'm using the Imperial Hunters, Legio Solaria, because I feel that they kind of fight in the same style as I picture the Firewolves fighting. So they can sub out Reavers for Warhounds because they do lots of guerrilla warfare and striking fast with lots of kind of light titans. They can have motivators fitted to their Titans, where in the damage control phase, you can discard your action dice to repair a point of critical damage. And we know what kind of what effect critical damage has, and you know it's kind of a waste of a die sometimes to fix it. These guys can just discard one of those action dice to just fix it automatically, which is really, really cool. They've got Cameline Shrouding as well, so they're minus one to hit at long range, which is really cool. But as soon as they take any structural damage, that's lost. It's basically these guys are kind of like coming out of the mist, striking hard, then disappear.
Eldar types.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So the artwork for these is really nice. They've kind of got a mottled effect on them for the kind of camera line that they've got, because they're not, you know, no clean kind of lines. So yeah, I'm going to use these for the fire wasps until they get some kind of proper rules.
I have a hard job picturing how you camouflage a warlord titan.
With great difficulty, I imagine.
Did you not see that going down the road?
But yeah, obviously we get eight of these legions and all their rules. I think this adds a lot to the game. We've had some games before this book came out, and we didn't actually use any of the kind of Legio rules. But it kind of mixes up your armies, and you have different strategies and stuff you can use, rather than just line up and shoot each other.
Do you have Legio rules? Sorry, I have not played Titanicus yet, so excuse my lack of knowledge. But do you have Legio rules in the core rulebook?
There's two legions in the core rulebook. Your legion, I believe.
Legio Grafanicus and Legio Tempestus, I believe.
Right.
And then okay. Plus the 8 in here, so that's 10 that you've got to pick from.
Right.
So there'll be something for everyone, really. Okay. And the minor differences between them.
Yeah, there's nothing too like thingy with it. They seem quite. They don't add much. They just add a little bit of flavour to the list.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any like super strong. Everyone's going to pick this Legio.
No, it's fairly balanced, and I quite like that.
Yeah.
The next kind of section of the book takes us through four new maniples as well. Now we get a couple of them in the main rule book. We've had a new maniple in this month's White Dwarf as well.
Yeah, very
which has
good
a big
one.
Kind of knight contingent. The maniples in here are brilliant. Now, this is one that I'll probably take for my Legio, the Corsair Battleline Maniple. It's just Reavers. Obviously, with Solari, I could swap Reavers for Warhounds. And essentially, these are quick, nippy Titans. In Games of Titanicus, you can move your full distance within your front arc. But if you're moving outside that, it takes double your movement. So essentially, you move half as fast, sidestepping or going back. These guys don't have that penalty, so they can sidestep out of buildings, they can backpedal and shoot, making them quite agile, and again, fitting with the kind of fire wasps theme that they'd be, you know, buzzing around and harassing people. Again, if you take this, obviously you haven't got the benefit of the main maniple from the rule book, that if you fail a command check, that's it. You can't issue any more commands. So you've got play a bit more carefully, choosing which engines to give commands to, because obviously, you know, you don't want to mess up and miss out that critical order that you needed to give, because that has dire consequences in Titanicus. The next one that we get is the Janissary Battleline Maniple. Now this is mandatory one Reaver and two Warhounds, and you can take an additional one of each if you want to. These let you, when you activate a Titan, you can activate a Knight Banner in the same activation,
right,
which is pretty good. So you've got an advantage of issuing less kind of orders to kind of get the jump on the enemy, which is pretty cool. This one's really, really good. Now, the Regia Battleline Maniple. Compulsory is two Warlords and one Warhound. So you have to take the two Warlords. You can then also take two optional Warhound Titans. If you've got any Legios that can sub out, I think you can swap.
Yeah, this is one I was looking at. The Legio Grafanicus can sub out any Warlord or Warhound, a single Warlord or Warhound, for a Reaver Titan.
And essentially, this represents a King and Queen, which are the two Warhounds, and they're kind of like courtiers.
Warlords.
The two Warlords, the King and Queen, and then they're courtiers of the Warhounds. Warhounds can normally merge their shields with each other. This formation lets you merge shields with the Warlord, so you can tank kind of shots and keep the shield levels wherever you want them to be. Basically, you choose the best shield profile and take the damage on whichever one you want to.
Yeah, it's very good.
It's really handy.
Sorry, I'm just going to raise my hand. Silly Titanicus question number two coming in. I'd really need to play this, don't I? So, with these maniples, you're not obviously talking about having knights in any of these formations. How do knights fit in? Do they have their own formations with this formation?
Think of them like detachments in 40k. You could have multiple maniples. You could just buy individual titans, but you get benefits to taking them as a maniple.
Right.
And then you can have additional titans that go alongside the maniple.
Do maniples cost points?
No, didn't cost anything.
I think in match play you have to have a maniple. I don't think you can play without. In open play you can. So you pick a maniple or multiple maniples. Knights are support, so you can add as many knights as you want. They fall outside the restrictions.
Okay.
And you can take additional titans outside that maniple as well, because in the lore, there could be maniples that have been depleted just a single engine, and they're just coming along for the ride.
Right.
But they wouldn't get the benefits of the maniple because they're working outside that.
Okay.
The more maniples you take, the more stratagem cards your opponent gets, though.
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of weigh up, you know, do you go for one all eggs in one basket maniple that does what you need, or do you diversify with a few multiple ones, knowing that you're giving stratagem points away to the opponent.
Okay.
If you think 40k but backwards, in 40k you get rewarded for taking these detachments. In Titanicus, your opponent gets rewarded.
Okay.
So yeah, it's really cool. And they're nice. There's not many models really in Titanicus, but the number of different lists you can do with these maniples is really nice. So the last one that we get in this is the Lupercal light manacle, named after Horus Lupercal. And it's just Warhounds. Warhounds all the way. And they can be formed into maniple, into squadrons when they like. Normally, you'd have to either be a squadron or just be a single Warhound. These can at will become a squadron if they want to. So you could, one turn, activate them all separately. And then the next turn, activate them all as one choice, and they can all merge the shields. So it's kind of just Warhounds, but very flexible, which is really cool. They also add 2 to armour rolls when they all attack the same target as well.
Yeah, that's good.
So basically a precision strike on something.
Take down big prey.
Yeah, so I think these different maniples work where, you know, where you'd have like warlords fighting warhounds, the fact that these have got different rules makes those kind of games balanced. Obviously you've got the points in there as well.
Yeah.
But it's just another tool, and I imagine we'll see a lot more of these in the kind of future box. So then the next kind of big section is the narrative campaign of Beta Garmin, which goes through, I think, about 6 or so missions, all kind of different stuff than the standard mission. You can play these in campaigns, which we'll talk to a bit later, but basically lots more different flavour games. I mean, we've only played a few of the kind of standard stock mission.
Yeah.
These add different things to do. My favourite one being the Titan Death, the final cataclysmic battle between the Loyalists and the Traitors. You take a massive force on each side, and each turn you roll 2d10. You can bring back models equal or less than that in scale.
Sweet.
So if you think, what's the scale of a warlord?
I think a warlord's 10.
So you're bringing back a titan each turn, aren't you?
Yeah.
The crews, because they're frantically fighting for their life, your fallen titans keep shooting. So there's a result where your titan, as it staggers down, fires. Yeah. These titans could keep firing because the crew are desperately trying to bring down other titans until by the end of the game, it's just fallen titans everywhere because, yeah, it all gets a bit brutal on Beta Garmin.
And the most straightforward of deployment maps.
It
well.
Is, yeah. Line up the titans.
Meat grind.
Go crazy. The objective is do as much damage in scale as possible.
Right.
So very similar to that first kind of training scenario,
yeah.
But with the titans reinforcing, which is cool. The final scenario is really cool as well, where you've got 1,500 points of loyalists on the board, surrounded by 3,000 points worth of traitors. They've got to hold out. I think some reinforcements come later on, but yeah, for the narrative missions, they're not necessarily balanced because it's retelling the story.
Narrative campaign.
Spoiler alert, the loyalists get battered. So yeah, really fun. I think we'd quite like to play through these as well.
Yeah.
And then the final part of the book really goes into kind of campaigns and how to run your campaign. It gives you a few different ideas on how to do it.
Is it like an experience for your princess?
There is, yeah. So you start off with 2,000 points of resources to buy your titans, but the average game is 1,500 points. Because your titans don't necessarily survive battle to battle. If you lose your warlord in game one, you've lost your warlord in game one. You get, I think it's 400 points each like turn of the campaign, so you can kind of buy replacements.
Almost by a warlord.
Every point of damage done on your titan needs repairing as well, and there's a cost to repair that. Or you could go, yeah, I can't really afford that. Let's just put out this badly damaged warlord on the battlefield. Obviously, if that you lose that there, that's going to cost you a lot more than repairing it would have been.
Yeah.
And I think that's really fun. Again, I don't think you should play them from the mindset of like super competitive. I think it should be telling the story. Everyone in the campaign splits off into loyalists or traitors. anyone's free to change sides. If, say, Treacherous Dave wants to defect to Horus, he can do.
He can't defect back because we know what your game is.
Yeah, you can do it once.
I think if I... When I inevitably get into this, I'm actually thinking of going traitor because you're both imperialists in this.
Yes.
So I.
Lee's
I fancy,
got a traitor.
I fancy going traitor. Is there a legion that kind of sided with Thousand Sons more so than. No?
Oh, what is the name of the Titan?
It's a Legio Astorum one, I think, but they were loyalists and the Titan was badly damaged and left there and then it got corrupted by the. I don't think it was a traitor Titan.
No, it wasn't. It was psychically controlled.
Yeah. You'll be able to find something there.
Yeah. Anyway, I keep setting this off on
the coming book in the summer. We'll have Titan heraldry and probably a bit more about which Titan sat with which factions. That'll be fun.
Okay.
And then the final bit of kind of map campaigns as well, similar to the boxed expansion to
Urban Conquest,
where you create a map, you have different sections, and you can fight over different locations. It suggests as its beta Garmin have multiple planets, and you can kind of divert forces.
That's cool.
Again, because you've got these 2,000 point kind of initial starting thing, you could have engines stationed in different squadrons, and you've got to kind of think like an RTS. You've got to manage what resources you've got across the galaxy. It's only a couple of pages, but it gives you ideas for how to do that. And I think it would be really fun if you had a few people kind of involved. Probably take a bit more work to pull off than that kind of boxed, ready to go campaign. But there's loads of ideas in here. And then to the end, we've got a few kind of details on what knights were with which factions and what heraldry they've got, which is really nice to kind of, paint up your knight households to match your titans. Again, like I say, this is going to get expanded in Doom of Moloch. But yeah, really, really good book. For 20-odd quid, I definitely say it's worth picking up for Titanicus players, just for the mana pools and the narrative missions, and the campaign system looked really good. I think we're going to see one of these books every 6 months or so. I think it's really, really good.
Awesome.
What are your kind of thoughts on books like that?
I think they're perfect. I think they're what you need to keep the system fresh.
Yeah, I think so. And I like the 6-monthly release cycle for it as well. So
it's not bombarding you.
Yeah, but it's also just not a really long time. Like, I think sometimes the wait for General's Handbook is like, I really like General's Handbook, but it's only a year away. Whereas this is only 6 months, so.
Yeah, that's really cool. So yeah, that's the kind of first of two expansions that we're looking at. The second one also comes from the Specialist Games Studio, and that is Gondor at War, the first proper expansion to Middle-Earth. In a lot of ways, it's very similar to the type of book that Titanicus is. The main bulk of it is 29 narrative scenarios telling you from, the defence of Osgiliath through to the final battle at the Black Gate.
Sweet.
29 battles between that, the kind of recommended forces to use in them. Again, they're not necessarily going to be balanced battles because they weren't all balanced battles. Some of them have got like new profiles in, so the big kind of troll at the end of Return of the King that looks like he's about to batter Aragorn, he gets a profile. really cool stuff like that. They also have a campaign system which has got two paths. You can follow either the books or the movie. So they've accommodated for both, because obviously there's things that were different in both of them. But yeah, really, really good. I think if you had a group of players who wanted to play through this story in lots of little games over the course of, a couple of months, really, really good. I don't think you could really adopt them to match play. I think it's more about telling the story than...
Right.
I mean, obviously, you're always going to play to win, but I think it's more narrative-based, this. And I think maybe fans of match play, maybe it isn't the supplement for them.
I
love stuff like this, all narrative battles, the Battle of Pelennor Fields and the Battle at the Black Gate.
For me, Lord of the Rings is more of a narrative game anyway, because the quality of the full lore is that good.
Yeah.
And like, really, yeah, you want to replay those battles you've watched on the big screen, in my opinion. And
so that's kind of the bulk of the book. We then also get some new profiles. We mentioned back, I think, when we did the Open Day podcast, and it goes through pretty much all the forces at the war at Gondor, and we get new profiles. So we've got, Aragorn and the people in Minas Tirith, new profiles for Irelas and Ingol that we've seen models for recently, who are in the Tall. All the fiefdoms, so you can take a force with the Dol Amroth forces, along with the Clansmen that came with Aragorn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some really, really fun stuff that you couldn't previously do in just the stock lists out of the book. I think your Dol Amroth knights, you'd probably want to use the list out of here rather than the stock one out of the book.
Right.
Be a lot more fun. So yeah, lots of new profiles. A lot of them for models that we've seen, like the Mummack War Leader.
As I say, is it all Gondos? There are some evil arms.
No, there's loads of evil ones as well. Corsairs of Umbar get some new profiles. But then my favourite part of the book, the Legendary Legions. Now, these are new army lists. You don't get to take any allies. You don't get an army bonus. You get some abilities built into these lists. They are very narrative-based. There's like models that you're not allowed to take. There's models that you have to take. So we've got the Rangers of Ithilien. So this is Faramir's forces that he had. I know, I can see Dave looking at this, because I know he's a fan of...
the Rangers of Gondor.
The Rangers of Gondor. Oh, yeah. So you get Frodo, Sam and Smeagol in the list. Just, you know, because they were there when they were, you know, trying to take back, fighting for Ost-Gilead to
get
kind of down to the passage of, what was it called? By the Minas Morgul, weren't they? They were heading that way. Frodo and Sam, when they left Faramir.
I can't think what it was called.
We get the Grey Company. This one's got J all over it. So we've got Aragorn, Gimli, Legolas, Halibrad, Eladin and Elahir, plus the Rangers of the North in their own kind of self-contained army. Aragorn gets the Flame of the West as a free upgrade because he had it at that point of the story.
For free.
Then the Return of the King, which is Aragorn, Legolas, Gimli and the Army of the Dead. So you've got both the what happened in the book and what happened in the films for them coming in kicking bottom at the Pelennor Fields. We've got the Riders of Theoden, which is the fully mounted army at Pelennor. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to take any models on foot because you're charging down into these auto battle lines.
Did you see anybody running down that hill? No, you did not.
There are rules in Lord of the Rings, though, for getting dismounted, aren't there?
You can get dismounted, but you can't have anyone on foot because, you know, where's the fun in that?
Yeah.
They get Durnhelm, which is the name that
Eowyn
gives herself, and that profile includes Merry riding on her.
Stabbing.
Yeah, so that's really cool that we get cool stuff like that. I think it's the first dual-mounted profile that we've got. Basically gets extra attack, but then the horse dies, they both come down and fight.
Pippin's got his own stat line on the Gandalf model, doesn't he?
But yeah, it's really cool, a good way to represent it. We get the Men of the West. Now, this is the end of Return of the King, where they're at the Black Gates, and they're fighting off just to buy Frodo more time. That is the special rule for this formation for Frodo. Once per game, they can all friendly models within 12 inches of Aragorn increase their fight by one for a single turn, just to buy Frodo that time. And this is a really cool list. You're not allowed anyone mounted, so it's kind of the opposite of the Rohan list, but it's pretty much the remaining members of the Fellowship at the Black Gate, plus all the other various characters and hanger-ons that they've kind of accrued over the way.
Are the eagles in that one?
The eagles aren't in this one. You have got the Knights of Dol Amroth, though, on foot, fighting alongside him, so that's a really cool list. We've got the Army of Gothmog, which is the kind of orcish hordes that were fighting.
This is the guy who's not afraid of catapults.
It is, Gothmog. And
just
steps
aside casually.
No, it's really cool. Then there's the army that I really like. It's the Grand Army of the South. This represents once that initial kind of charge from the Rohan has come down and it looks like victory's near. The horns blow and then the armies from the south come up. Now, this is a mixed Harad army. So you've got the Far Harad elements. You've got the Haradrim elements of it. You have to take a leader from both of these because obviously these are forces that don't like each other that much. They're just working under the Dark Lord's kind of orders. So, but this means you can take your mummocks, you can take your camels alongside your Haradrim raiders. Yeah, I'm going to build an army based on this because it looks ace. And then the final list is the forces from the Black Gate. So you've got your Mordor troll chieftain character who batters Aragorn. You've got the Mouth of Sauron and... yeah, pretty much the kind of more heavily armed elite orcs. None of these lists are in Nazgul. Now, what I really like about this book, each of the armies has got designer notes on why you chose those armies and what features were in it, which I've not seen in any kind of books, maybe in like White Dwarf behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's it. Or Warhammer Community.
The thinking behind why we've done this.
He said in this one that there's no Nazgul in it because at that point the Nazgul are on their way to Mount Doom because they realise that the rings can get destroyed, so the Nazgul wouldn't be involved in that battle.
No.
Which is really cool.
Plus the eagles scared of them.
Plus the eagles scared of them. Likewise, the eagles aren't there because they're heading to save Frodo. And then, yeah, lots of pretty artwork. So it's a very, very narrative-heavy book. You do get these legendary legions. Whether they'd be super competitive in a like grand tournament, maybe not. But I think
you've got a lot of choice in a couple of them. The I've already forgotten the names of them. You'll just close
lots
the book.
Of choice.
The one with all the men in it that you can't have mounted. By that, I mean Men of the West. that's got quite a lot of... I mean, you haven't got anybody mounted, but you've got a lot of variety there between all the Rohan...
If you want your list of just men, Dave...
just dismounted men.
Just dismounted men.
But yeah, basically, you elite character army, essentially, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a fairly cheap army to do as well.
Yeah.
Compared to the Far-Harad force, which is probably not so cheap.
No.
But looks cool. It's got lots of elephants in it.
Yeah, it's got lots of elephants.
So yeah, again, it's...
Polyfonts.
If you match play, maybe not. If you love the narrative side, which really is what the heart of Lord of the Rings, definitely a brilliant book. Beautiful book as well. Really kind of well laid out. Artwork's gorgeous. Again, talking to Jay Clare at the open day, I think we're going to see a lot of these in the future as well.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. For sure. So if you had to pick your favourite, which one?
Ooh, just because I'm painting Titans, I'm going to have to go Titan Death. I'm sure once I've got some paints on my mummock... Yeah, they're both good for different things. You know, Gondor War, definitely more narrative-based. Titanic has probably got more stuff you could use in a normal match play game.
Inverted commas, Matt was using there then as well. Normal game. Excellent. Well, if you picked up either of those, let us know what you think of them and if you've had any games with them. You can reach us over on our normal social media accounts at Sprues and Brews or over on Facebook. And we do have time for one more segment before we wrap up, and that is our community top three. So you guys have had a couple of weeks, seeing as we skipped last week, to get in your top three expansions. And as always, you've not let us down. So without further ado, Matt, go for it.
So we've got Gunwich UK going with Kill Team. Speed Freaks, Gloom Spike, Gits and Adeptus Titanicus. Not really expansions as such, but I get the... Yeah, they're kind of sub-games, aren't they?
Yeah.
And Gloom Spike, Gits is an awesome battle tome. We covered it if you listened to the last podcast, I believe.
If you haven't, then you should.
G Ambulance Service has Horus Heresy, Age of Darkness, which again, it is essentially an expansion of 7th edition 40k.
Yeah.
Dark Millennium, which was the expansion to 2nd edition 40k, with all the data cards for vehicles and lots more psychic powers.
Yeah.
On that, I'm going to put a late honourable mention of the Warhammer Magic expansion to age-old Warhammer.
The original one.
Yeah. And then their final choice was Warhammer Quest Catacombs of Terror, which is one of the expansion missions for the old Warhammer Quest. And we're kind of seeing again in Blackstone Fortress with the expansions for that.
Some really cool nostalgic ones there.
Yeah, Brackhart's gone Advanced Hero Quest Terror in the Dark, if you've got some proper old school love there. They've also gone for Warhammer Quest Catacombs of Terror. Ooh, and a good one that I'm surprised we haven't mentioned, Warhammer Siege, which saw Siege Engines and the mighty old Warhammer Castle
being released. Warhammer Castle.
I remember a good battle report with the castle. I think it was Bretonians and Wood Elves against Skaven. I mean, it might have just been Skaven. Yeah.
It was an awesome kit. Pandora's Bits Box went for Planet Strike. Did enjoy games of Planet Strike. Apocalypse, Titans used to be uncommon. Yes, they were. And when GW ended their contract with Fantasy Flight Games, they bought every expansion for Blood Bowl and Conquest. Conquest was a good card game. Demon Hammer says Codex Eye of Terror. Chapter Approved 18, specifically the custom character rules, which we haven't tried out yet. We really should do. And
I did. I tried out. I created the most monstrous custodian character.
Yeah. Stock custodian are monstrous. And Urban Conquest, which, again, I'm really looking forward to trying. Andy Wood said Malign Sorcery. Yeah, that was a really good book and kind of precursor to second edition. Warhammer Underworlds and Vigilis. Dan Miller says The General's Compendium, which was an old fantasy book.
Oh, yeah, I've got that upstairs.
I think I bought that for like a pound from somewhere.
Yeah.
Can't remember where.
The Vehicle Design Rules, which were an old, what are they, third edition, maybe? Yeah.
I remember that was, in White Dwarf they were, because there was pictures of Eldar skimmers made of like washing up bottles and yeah. stuff like that.
And Blood Bowl Sevens. Now, is that the kind of, I want to say five aside, but obviously not, it's seven aside, but the cut down version of Blood Bowl.
Yeah.
We had less players per team, and I think they were quicker games. Our friends, the Purple Sparkly Unicorns, have gone Necromunda Outlanders, which had all the kind of expansion guys that we're not seeing this year because they're making new stuff.
Yep.
Mighty Empires, which was an old campaign system for Warhammer, where you had tiles to make a campaign map. And Warhammer Quest, which is, yeah, a good choice. Son of Nemetum said Eye of Terror, Titan Death, and Urban Conquest. Ropux, and they're thinking outside the box here, they liked the expansion to the museum for more displays. Now, did you guys ever go to Warhammer World before they built the exhibition hall?
Oh,
it was basically just a single room with just the heavy metal models lined up in cabinets around the side.
I remember seeing pictures in White Dwarf.
It was, yeah. it was cool at the time, but nothing like the massive dioramas and stuff they've got now. And Oskin Pickles says Elves, Dwarves and Dungeon Bowl back in the day.
Okay.
And there we go, there's our top threes from you guys out in the Twitterverse.
Excellent, some very random choices in there, and some very nostalgic ones too, which is great to see. That brings us round nicely to our top three for next week.
Yeah, so with the Gene Stealer Cults being fully re-released by the time that podcast goes out, and the Skaven getting a united battle tome, we want to know what three old armies you'd like to see either reinvented or brought back together as a single battle tome or codex.
Are we going to include armies that currently don't exist in...
Yeah, yeah. If it's been an army, even if it's just had models in the past, what would you like to see come back? So if you want to see your Zoat army you've always dreamed of, then go for it.
Excellent.
Battle tome, Thermir, whatever you want.
Brilliant. So you can get yours in early, your top threes via at Sprues and Brews on Twitter or facebook.com/Sprues and Brews. Also feel free to comment on the website, as many of you have been doing. I think that around about wraps up this probably quite, I don't know how long it is because I've not edited it yet, but quite a lengthy podcast this week. We will hopefully be back next week. As long as Nurgle stays away,
we'll be covering LVO and all the news that will inevitably get there. And a little review of the Gene Stealer Cults book as well.
So we're talking about Codex Imperial Agents next week then?
The lack of Codex Imperial Agents.
It will arrive eventually. thank you for listening. Thanks for all your feedback as always. And we'll be back again next week. Bye.
Bye.